You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 15.
Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters, where I'm joined by incredible guests who have faced challenge and navigated through it and are so willing to share their story and practical advice to help you navigate the storms in your life. The storm is the theme of today's episode, where I'm joined by the fabulous Verity Hart, founder of After the Storm, a go-to place to help you find the right support and healing you may need to help you through life's lessons that are coming your way. It's been inspired by Verity's own personal storm story. And just like this, Mojo Matters podcast was triggered in response to lockdown and how lockdown has been impacting people's lives in so many different ways. So I'm really happy that Verity agreed to be on the show today, sharing her own personal story, the inspiration behind After the Storm, and the support available from this incredible service. So welcome to the show, Verity.
Hi, Jo. Thanks for having me.
So great to have you. And so look, why don't you just start by sharing your story? You talk about storm stories, don't you?
Yeah. So we've got a section on the website that's called Storm Stories. And the idea behind it is to enable people to share any sort of journeys that they've been on, to let us know that we're not alone, really, you know, to connect with people. So, I mean, and it was born out of my personal experiences, which I don't think are any more or less than anything that we all go through. You know, it happens to all of us. I lost my parents in the space of 3 years, not that long ago. And I think, you know, I was 40 and 43. I think that's too young to lose your parents. I think there are people a lot younger than me that do, that probably go through a much harder time, but it doesn't make it any less, you know, devastating when it happens. So I think that's probably the most recent sort of experience that I've been through that inspired After the Storm, and just not knowing really where to turn, what support was out there, and you know, or how to talk to people about grief and loss as well, because it's still a very much a taboo subject in our society, really. I think my dad and mum both died in very different circumstances. So dad had a fall, and all of a sudden his health just sort of spiraled, and within a week he'd passed away, which was so traumatic. We he wasn't in the best of health, but we kind of expected him to potter on for another 10 odd years and annoy us all from his chair. It was devastating. Dad was I was a daddy's girl, really. So for me, it was a big blow. But of course, it affects your other parent massively when they lose their partner. And so it's almost like you lose both your parents at the same time, because we're also, grief is such a solitary and individual thing. And, you know, my mum's grief was massive. And she was very, very sort of blinkered in that grief. So I was very lucky because I've got my own family and had that support from my husband and that kind of thing. But it was a really hard time, and it was really hard supporting mum through that time as well. My children were a bit younger when dad died. So although they were very upset and it was sad, I don't think it necessarily resonated so much with them at that time. And then awfully, sort of 2 years later, mum started to feel unwell. I might get a bit emotional when I talk about this, so I do apologise. We went, you know, for various hospital appointments, doctor's appointments. And she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which had spread to her liver. Now, I immediately, and it's not like me, because I'm usually a very optimistic, positive person, went into, I was dead. Yeah. It was a really strange reaction, actually, for me. And I didn't want to get out of bed in the morning. And I didn't want to go to work, and I'd go to work and I couldn't cope. You know, I'd already got her dead and buried before she'd got kind of gone there. And it was her that noticed it in me. And the one day she just pulled me to one side and she called me Vev. So she said, Vev, what's going on? And I just burst into tears. I think I'd been holding it all in. I'd got going to chemo. I'd been trying to create lovely life experiences for us. I'd taken her and my girls down to London to see a show and, to try and create those memories and block it out. But I wasn't coping at all. And I didn't know where to go. She had the foresight to phone the outreach nurse, the cancer outreach nurse, who actually put me in touch with one of the psychotherapists at Severn Hospice in Shropshire. We live in Shropshire. And I had 1 hour session with her, and she just sort of helped me put everything in perspective. And then I was able to support my mum through her, last year, which was very difficult. We always joked when we were younger that I said, if you get ill, you're going in a home. I'm not looking after you. I'm not the caring type, sort of thing. And actually, I ended up going down mornings, nights, helping her, putting her to bed when she didn't feel well, all that kind of stuff, which actually for me is very, I feel like I did whatever I could for my mum. And she passed away. It was really sad. There was nothing left unsaid, and everything was kind of dealt with. But it had a massive impact on my kids, actually. Mum was always sort of there. So both me and my husband worked away when we were the girls were younger. And so Mum was that kind of consistent carer. And my youngest, who was seven at the time, took it very badly. She's quite an emotional individual. She's a bit like me, actually, quite fiery and passionate about things. And she just couldn't handle her emotions at that age. So she was getting angry and then tearful and all sorts. And then my eldest daughter, who is the calmest, kind of intelligent young lady, very, very wise beyond her years. I suddenly got a call from school to say she'd slapped her friend around the face, which is totally out of character, and that they were going to have to exclude her for a morning because of what she'd done. And of course, I was devastated for her. She didn't really understand it. And when we went back, so the school were brilliant, actually. So they did that, but they offered us sort of pastoral support all the way through. And it basically transpired that she is the type within her friendship group that always tries to pep everyone up, offers them support. If somebody's feeling a bit down, she rallies them round. And that particular day, she was feeling really low and they just didn't get it. They didn't understand. They didn't have the sort of emotional maturity, I guess, to support her through it. And they were winding her up and she just snapped.
Mm-hmm.
And through all of that, I had absolutely no clue where to go to as a parent to deal with that. I mean, what do you do? I'd not experienced it before. I think there will be thousands of people out there that have never really experienced grief before or the impact that it might have, and not know where to go. And I think, with hindsight, obviously, when somebody dies, the funeral directors give you all the support they give you information about, you know, grief counsellors and all that kind of stuff, but you're so wrapped up in what's going on, I don't think you think about it. Similarly, I guess the hospice did the same, but it was later than 6 weeks down the line, and I just didn't know where to go or who to turn to. And so that in itself creates a level of anxiety as a parent, not being able, I was all right. I could cope with my grief as long as my girls were okay, I thought. And the moment that they weren't, it knocked me. But at the same time, the moment I showed any sign of, I didn't want to say weakness, but that it was affecting me, they'd all fall apart as well.
Yeah.
So it was that circle. And I think I just learned that you absolutely have to be open and talk and able to express your feelings. I think I probably added to it by bottling up my emotions in that instance. Like I say, the schools really helped us. They pointed me in touch with grief counsellors and things like that. And we actually had grief counsellors go into school and do sessions with the girls away from their lessons to help them process things, which really helped. But like I say, until that point, I didn't even know there was really such a thing as a grief counsellor for children specifically. And then I guess added to that, my sister has always lifelong issues with, how do I put it, addictive behaviour. So probably when we were kids with food, then with spending, and continuing with her sort of overeating, very compulsive eating, and then later and just more recently with an alcohol addiction, and that has also prevented me really in my grief journey, because I've had to, not had to support her, but wanted to support her through that, and that's had a lot of challenges as well. And again, where do you go as a person with a family member that's got an addiction problem for support for you? Because it's a roller coaster. So you can find support for the addict or the person, I don't know, addict's a horrible word, for the person that has the addiction or the problem. But as that family member supporting that and the stigma and the, you know, you don't really want to admit it, or you don't know who to ask to help, who you can trust, what to do, where do you go? And I think, again, with that, searching the internet and knowing whether I'd found credible resources that could help me or not was a real challenge through all of this. So that's kind of where After the Storm's been born from, really, is making sure that there's credible resources out there that people can find and access in a friendly and connecting manner.
Yeah, because I mean, I think what really strikes me about what you're saying is, and this is kind of in the intro, really, these life lessons, if we call them, these experiences that we have, you know, grief, it sounds like in your case, started before, much before your mum died. Mm-hmm. And that kind of continues, doesn't it? And with the relationships that you have around you and, supporting your sister through her life lessons and challenges as well, that can really take its toll, you know, not just the death of your parents, but when that process starts, wanting to be there for your children, wanting to be there for your sister. And, you know, when you think about it, we're navigating so many different life challenges, maybe simultaneously. And it's really difficult, isn't it, sometimes to think, you know, where do I go? Or even to admit, I need the help.
Or even to know that you need the help. And I think that's the thing. I mean, I would say I'm a very optimistic and resilient person. I always try to find a solution or to better myself in some way. I think as a kid, I was painfully shy. And nobody believes this when I tell them, but I mean painfully shy. I would hide behind my mum. I never went to brownies. I never did dance classes, anything like that. Because the first time she tried to put me into a class, I screamed the place down. She was so embarrassed, she whipped me out. And that was that. Now, that doesn't help anybody get over those kind of things, but that was just her way of dealing with it. And because of that, painful feeling when you're shy of being in a room with people and being able to get over it, I've always sought out ways to better myself, to get over those kind of feelings and to be able to interact with people. I think that mindset has a very big part to play in how you cope with some of the challenges that life throws at you. You know, some people do find it hard and they struggle, and we all struggle, but it's how you use that struggle and turn it around into working for you and making those positive strides forward. That's something
how
that
have,
I think.
How have you done that, Verity? Because like you say, you know, you've been contending with all these things, and I know there's some other stuff that we talked about previously as well that had impacted your life too. And you know, part of this Mojo Matters podcast is also to help share some of the techniques and the tools, but to help people find the resources and the support that they might need if they relate to any part of somebody's story. Because sometimes we all feel like we're going through this thing and actually we're the only one, and there's always somebody probably who's been through something similar. And you were saying, and I know from your background, because you've done a lot of self-improvement and NLP and all of those kind of things. How did you, though, what was your defining moment for realizing, actually, I've got these tools and I also need to support myself here?
That's a really good question. I don't think I've told you this. I know obviously we've spoken before, but I used to be a business change consultant. I had to travel for my job, so I drove all over the country. And one day I was driving and had a massive panic attack. Wow. And I was on the motorway and I just thought I was going to crash and kill everyone, which is, but it, you know, that's a panic comes over you. And I actually got to a position where I was driving like 2 hours out of my way to avoid motorways so that I could get through because of the panic. So it was so extreme. And that for me was a moment where, so I then got pregnant, had my kids, went on maternity leave. It was easy, didn't have to go anywhere. And my husband got made redundant as I think my youngest daughter was, I think she was like 12 months old or something. I was old enough for me to go back to work. And it was, In that moment, I knew I was going to have to drive on a motorway if I was going to go back to work. And I knew that I had to do something to get over this, whatever this was that was preventing me from actually living my life. I'd got to do it. And I got an interview with somebody who I'd worked with previously, and I had to drive from Shropshire up to Wigan and I had to go on the M6. There was no way around it. And so my husband came in the car with me and sat with me, and I drove up there and I drove back, and I knew from that moment that that was it. I had got the job, I had to do it. And I knew if I could overcome that, which 10 years pretty much of driving anywhere but on a motorway, I could overcome anything in life if I just applied that mindset. It's that kind of do or die. Sometimes you are backed into a corner and you have to do what you have to do. But I think there's other things that you can do to help yourself in those moments to feel better. You know, we all wake up, don't we? I had a moment this morning where I wake up and felt absolutely wretched. I could have killed probably, you know, as soon as look at me, I needed my coffee and I needed just to get over myself, really. And it's that, right, what are you going to do to snap yourself out of this mood? For me, exercise is absolutely key. you know, fresh air, exercise, getting that adrenaline going is a real lifesaver. Getting dressed and putting your makeup on. We've spoken about this before, but it's that, right, I'm going to show up today and I'm going to be present. And I think that with the smaller things that come along, that is so important, especially through this COVID period, because I will make sure I put my camera on when I go on a business meeting. I will make sure that I'm present in that room. Even if nobody else has got their camera on, I'll put it on. It's not because I want people to look at me. It's because, therefore, I am accountable for being present in that moment. And I think we all absolutely have to do that.
Yeah, I really like that. I really love what you're saying there, because some of these things are quite small things relatively, aren't they? You know, and this has come up quite a lot on episodes of Mojo Matters, the like exercise being really helpful for people. But also that you just said was one of my go-to things. My first thing to do when I totally lost my mojo, it was get dressed, put my makeup on, and socially connect with people in the best way. Because actually I was feeling quite socially anxious at the time, and that was nothing, you know, I'd never experienced that. I'm the sort of person that I go out networking and I'm, you know, I'm always chatting to people. And yeah, I think with the pandemic and being very isolated, this was something I didn't recognize in myself at all. Yeah. And that anxiety was very overwhelming. So yeah, I really love that, because, and I'm glad I'm not the only one that, you know, just thinks, just slap my lippy on and get dressed and everything will be fine. And, you know, it's a starting point. It's great. And there's also so much more support that's out there for people, including After the Storm, which is a totally amazing place that you have created. So yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit more about what also inspired you? Because there's also a real depth and breadth to the support that you're offering here, isn't
there? Yeah, there is actually. And I think, and that does come from a lot of my life lessons. So with After the Storm, we kind of cover 8 different areas of things that are that impact mental health, I would say. But also the other bit that I just really like to stress on, it's about people that want to go through personal change and growth and develop. So it's not all doom and gloom and that people are going through hard times. I think there's lots of us out there that naturally want to find a better us and a better way of doing things. And so that's kind of where it came from. But I guess it starts from quite a young age with me. So I've talked a little bit about my sister having addictive personality, but I think it runs in the family. My parents, I wouldn't say they were alcoholics, but they were heavy drinkers. And that led to quite an interesting childhood at times. You know, quite nothing ever for me that I'm aware of that was desperately traumatic in any way, but you know, arguments and quite colourful, and we're all quite a openly emotional family in that respect. And my sister always struggled with her weight, and I was always the skinny bean one. And so when I sort of hit puberty and started to get a few curves, I thought I was getting fat. It was just the way that the language and the kind of atmosphere in my house was. Mum, through, you know, we do everything as parents to help our children. We think we're bound to not always get it right. And I think you'll see through this story and some of the problems that I've had and some of the problems my sister had, I don't think mum and dad always got it right. Doesn't mean they didn't love us and we absolutely adore them, but you know, things, and I'm sure there's things I'll get wrong with my girls as well. So but yeah, with that, I thought I was getting fat. I stopped eating. It was easy for me because we got up early. My mum was a florist, so she went to market every morning to buy fresh flowers, so she generally wasn't there for breakfast time, so nobody really noticed if I had breakfast or not. I could get away with not having lunch at school because I said I was having packed lunches, and I never used to make myself a packed lunch. And then I'd kind of go to aerobics or something in the evening and not really, this was as I got to about 15, 16, I guess, not really want my tea when I got in because I'd just done a workout. You know, so it was really easy to avoid eating. And then I worked in the local chip shop as well as a teenager. So it's like, oh, I don't want to eat. I've been working with food all day. dead easy to avoid eating. And then I'd have my Sunday lunch on a Sunday and probably pig out completely. And my teenage years went on like that. When I went to university, it got worse because I was eating pizza with my friends and all that kind of stuff. And I did start to put on weight and I couldn't handle it. So I developed bulimia and I was pretty poorly with it. I met my husband at uni and he noticed something wasn't right and helped me with it. So I stopped being sick, but I was still binge eating. So my weight just went, we got married quite young. So I was 25 when I got married. And I think the year in which, was it 2 years we were engaged? I put on 4 stone in that period of time from when we got engaged to when we got married, which my wedding dress. I remember having a panel about this wire to put into it because of when I'd had my previous fitting to my final fitting, I'd put on so much weight, which was just horrendous, really, when I look back on it. And he stuck by me through all of that, bless him. And I managed to lose some weight, and I was a bit yo-yo dieting, really. And then when I finally had my third daughter, Alexa, I realised I was the big mum on the sidelines just watching my kids' life. And I did not want to be that. So this is another turning point, I guess you could say. I did not want to be that person. I wanted to be actively involved in their lives. And so I joined a well-known slimming organisation and I started dancing. And I lost all the weight. I lost 5 stone in, I think it was about a year and a half. Actually became a consultant and ran those classes myself through my end of my maternity leave. And I haven't really looked back since. I got even more into exercise at that point. I have my eating under control. My weight still goes up and down, but I don't stress about it now. I know there's a limit. And I need to, you know, get a bit more regulated with what I'm eating, cut out the wine a bit, you know, up the exercise or whatever. But I've got that completely under control. And I have my husband to thank for that. But what concerns me is there's so much information on the internet now about those kind of things that for children that are curious, I don't know if that's the right word, to maybe think they might want to try it or have a compulsion towards eating disorders, they can find out how to do it on the internet.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That worries me.
Yeah.
That really worries me. I really want there to be resources that will say this is what it is and this is how to avoid it, rather than this is how it is and this is the cycle of behavior that takes you to that point.
Yeah.
And I really think there needs to be a turning in the way that these things are actually portrayed to young people and adults, parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So your support starts with younger people and the range of maybe issues that and challenges that younger people are facing. And it covers a real spectrum as well, doesn't it? Other life lessons. So what is included?
Well, so we've got things around debt support and housing and stuff like that. And this stems from the journey that I've been on with my sister. So I think I've sort of touched on the fact that she had a massive problem with her weight. So we both of us have that kind of theme with us. And she felt it was her only option to have a gastric bypass, and it's worked for her. And it was probably one of the best things she ever did, but she replaced that food addiction, because it's not an easy option having a gastric bypass. It's not pleasant and it's very restrictive. She replaced that initially with spending, and then with, like I said, alcohol. And so got herself into all sorts of trouble financially that I think my parents have bailed her out of over the years. And as mum came to the end of her life, my sister was in a rental property. They wanted it back for their son. So she was having to look for somewhere else to move to. And I had to go guarantor for her on a property because she couldn't obviously get it for, because her credit rating was absolutely shot. And as they went through the due diligence, they found out that she'd got county court judgments against her that she didn't know about. Sound like I live in a soap opera, don't I? But we're really quite normal people. And this is where I think this is all born from. And so she couldn't get a rental property at all. You want to call it lucky or unlucky, but obviously we had my parents' property available for her to move into. And she's been fortunate enough to be able to get out of the hole that she was in because of the, you know, the financial situation we found ourselves in after selling that property. And she's been able to stay in it as a rental. So it's all worked out very nicely, but it just led me to see that all these things impact our mental health. So your financial ability, and we all can all easily rack up debt. I mean, I've got myself into a place where I'm like, God, I need to get rid of that credit card. You know, it's easy done.
Yeah.
So I feel that that massively impacts your mental health. So all these things can impact, you know, if you have an addictive personality or behaviours, that's going to impact your mental health. It's going to impact potentially your financial situation. It could impact your relationships. It can all spiral. They're all interlinked. And though, so that's where the kind of breadth of coverage for After the Storm comes from, because I think with a lot of the help that's out there, and we signpost to a lot of that help, because I think, you know, these guys are the specialists, they know what they're talking about, but they cover one dimension. And we wanted to make sure that people can see that there are multi-dimensions to our mental health and wellness. And if we address some of them, and that people might not have thought of, like we talked about earlier, you might not know that you'd got that problem. You might think, I feel really down and I'm stuck. You could go into After the Storm and go see, you know, financial and housing support or some of the other area, bereavement support or relationship advice, and go, actually, those areas are impacted too. So I might have a look there, and you might get a different view from going to those other places. So that's the idea behind it, and that connection. Connection is so important.
You know, I think it's brilliant the way that you're approaching this, because you're absolutely right. This stuff that affects our mental health comes from so many different dimensions, doesn't it? And it's almost, you know, it can be an accumulation of things, and it's, well, where do I start? So I think it's brilliant that you've got it all in one place. So maybe we could just finish with, if there is someone struggling right now, they think there's no hope, or they just don't know what to do, what's the one piece of advice you would give them?
Reach out to somebody. First off, you are never alone, as alone as you think. And if you're really in a bad place, I would always, you know, go to the Samaritans or whatever, because that has to be, you know, if you are at risk, you absolutely have to take care of that. But if you are sat at home, like so many of us are at the moment through the pandemic, you're absolutely at your wit's end. You might be homeschooling, you might be juggling a job, you might just think, this can't be my life, then, you know, reach out to a friend. I don't want to plug After the Storm, but go to After the Storm, because we're trying to get those stories out there to show that people aren't alone. But ultimately, it's make that connection with somebody, so that you trust, that you know can listen to you, and get that kind of, get it off your chest. Don't bottle it up, because we all try and keep our stiff upper lip, being British, and actually, you know, it doesn't work. It's a load of nonsense. Yeah. Be more Mediterranean. Be more Italian. You know, get it out there. Let's talk. Let's connect. Because somebody will throw you a lifeline. There's always hope. That's the way I live by things. There's always hope.
Brilliant. So. I love that. So come on, now you do have to plug After the Storm. Tell us where people can find you, because it's an amazing service that you're offering here.
Thank you. So we are afterthestorm.com. is our website, so you can find us there. We're also on Instagram, we are After the Storm UK, and Facebook, we are After the Storm Co UK, I think. So yeah, we're on all the platforms. Come and give us a go. We try and give out some kind of motivational, inspiring hints and tips through quotes. I always used to collect quotes, and now I know why. Yeah. It's wonderful. Yeah. Please do come and have a look. And if you've got a story to share with us, absolutely contact us, because we are trying to publish stories so that people can see they aren't alone. You can get us at hello@afterthe-storm.co.uk. It's all on the website.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming on, for being very, very open, sharing your storm stories as well. Really appreciate you both.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Jo Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.